The Book of Mormon is like the miracle child of two completely unsuitable parents who somehow manages to combine the best traits of each. It has the provocative, edgy hilarity of South Park, as well as the uplifting energy and persistent optimism of the traditional Broadway musical. And it tells the story of two missionaries who are sent to Uganda to convert the locals, but be warned, The Sound of Music, it ain't. It's riddled with profanity, and that's the least of it. Joining us now are Andrew Reynolds, who plays Elder Price, everyone's golden boy, and Josh Gad, who plays Elder Cunningham, not everyone's golden boy.
Well said.
And yes. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. And congratulations. It must be a lot of fun to be in a big Broadway hit.
It's better than not being in a hit.
Yes, well, celebrities come by?
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Every night, I really do feel like we're at the Shrine Auditorium because it's like you look out in the audience. And I was saying the other day, I went up on a line because I looked out and I saw David Fincher sitting in one chair. And then in front of him was Francis Ford Coppola, and then over to the right was Shirley MacLaine, and I was like, somebody going to bring out the Thalberg Award now?
Insane. What's happening? Goldie Hawn, that was a rough one as well.
Kevin Spacey, Goldie Hawn.
Goldie Hawn in the front row.
But often these things lead to being cast in other things. I'm not sure. Do you want to be in a David Fincher film?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
I think the two of us feel like we could do a really nice sequel to Benjamin Button where I play the Brad Pitt role and Andrew plays
Cate
Blanchett role. I think,
or maybe could we musicalize
that? Yeah, but instead of getting younger, he just gets skinnier.
I hear it's so hard to get into the show that there's a problem with counterfeit tickets.
There has been a problem. We weren't really aware of it, and then I guess it was last weekend. We had to hold the curtain for it seemed like a long time. It was 15 minutes, I guess, that we held the curtain. Because, there were some counterfeit tickets in the audience, which I guess is something that hasn't happened in a while on Broadway. So I certainly feel bad for those people that were
duped. But you have to take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, totally.
Absolutely.
And I promised. I gave the producers my vow that I'd stop doing.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah, they were happy.
Just doesn't your character do a song that's a bit of a takeoff on Bono? Has he stopped by or is he
the
too
edge
busy?
The Edge came the other night and I almost had a heart attack. I was like, I can't make fun of your best friend, but I'm going to because I get paid to. But it's, it's one of those things where, the best was, what's his name? John Bon Jovi came to the show. And, in the first part of the show, I call Nikki James' character, John Bon Jovi, because my character's just an idiot. And he did not look too thrilled because I think he thought that I was picking on him since he was there. But it's John Bon Jovi, if you're listening, which I know you are because you're a big fan of the show, then I didn't make fun of you personally.
No.
Well, I'm surprised that The Edge was there because I would assume that he's busy every night rewriting Spider-Man, no?
Well, you would think. Although maybe they've given them a little break. They've closed down. Maybe they have a tiny little break.
I've read that this show has been in development for 7 years. At what point did you get involved?
Well, I will answer first because my story is shorter. I just joined them last summer, actually, for their last workshop.
Thank God.
So I didn't – I wasn't part of the whole process, but I joined them last July. I guess it was July and August. We did a workshop, and then we started rehearsals in January for the Broadway production. Josh, on the other hand, has
I joined for the very first workshop when it existed. That was 3 years ago, and it existed as one act. And it was simply an experiment, literally, to see if people in the flesh could get away with what animated characters could get away with. And so, we got up there that very first performance and we did a very tricky song in the first act that anybody who's seen the show would recognize as an Hakuna Matata send-up.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about later.
Yes. And
as best we can. All of this involves worries about the FCC, but that's a whole other matter.
But we did it. And from that moment on, it was clear as day that audiences would embrace it.
But since you've been workshopping it for all that time, does that mean that it's been in constant flux?
Constant.
I mean, that's what's so great about Trey Parker and Matt Stone and Bobby Lopez, the composer, that they were constantly changing things. And all through rehearsals and through previews particularly, they were always making changes. Not huge changes, not big structural changes, but just tightening things, clarifying things. They were never precious about about their work.
There
so.
Was a brilliant moment where I you know, because every time it's a kind of show where we would come in every day and we would constantly say to each other, you know, it's like they can't make a mistake. It's every time they make a change, the script gets better and better. And there was a series of scenes in the second act and a song called I Am Africa in the middle of them. And one day they had this brilliant idea to take all of those scenes and interlock them into this song. And it was one of the most brilliant – it was so simple, but it was one of the most brilliant changes.
And, you know, the audience probably – I'm sure it's something that, you know, they wouldn't notice too much. But, like, for us working on it, it was something that they streamlined in a very egoless way and cut some things and changed some things. And it was very refreshing to work with them like that.
But it must get confusing during previews.
It was a little confusing. I mean, it's a little stressful, but I think you just kind of have to hold it all lightly and you work quickly. And
actually, Andrew Reynolds is the king of changes. I was the one who was always the like they would give him. They would give him a brand new song and he'd nail it that night.
Wow,
with
hell.
Me, they would give me one little line change and I'd be like,
That's not true.
Well, I'm assuming part of the reason that it needed that fine tuning is the show starts off just with so much energy. And then there's the fear that you just can't keep that up.
Sure.
And somehow every time I thought, well, this is going to flag a bit.
Yeah.
They came up with something
yeah,
else.
Yeah, they reinvigorate it with some other action. Yeah, I mean that's the brilliance of all of their work. And if you know Avenue Q, I feel like is like that, and South Park the episodes, and certainly the film is like that. And
Team America.
Yeah, I mean they're just good at sort of monitoring the audience's pulse. I think when it starts to dip.
Now you said that what they were really trying to do is what they could do in animation in real life. But there are certain things they can do here that they can't do on television.
Absolutely.
As well.
I mean, that's a story that I enjoy and that I find myself telling a lot is that Trey has said that, you know, if you're working on television, you're dealing with the FCC, right? And then in movies, you're dealing with the MPAA, and there's always some sort of censorship, you know, some sort of censor. But on Broadway, there's none of that. There's nothing.
Except some audience members who are rather stony-faced.
Perhaps some audience members, but there's no official – there's nobody telling you what to do. There's nobody checking your script. So they could really do whatever they wanted.
The fascinating thing about the show for me is that day in and day out, I'm told by audience member after audience member, you know what? Wasn't as offensive as I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
We're getting away with things that nobody could have dreamed about saying on Broadway a year ago.
Yeah. Well, David Mamet and other playwrights wrote a lot of those lines.
In a musical.
In a musical.
But you also have a word here that I don't think ever was used before on Broadway, and we can't use it on that.
Exactly.
I know. There's a couple of those. I mean, I think that's the great thing for Josh and I is that obviously this is a brand of humor that very much existed in film and in television, but just not on Broadway and specifically in the musical form. So the fact that like we get to do a musical every night that is very contemporary, and yet it's a classical musical comedy. The form, we didn't mess with the form at all. It's very much, you know, song and dance numbers.
It's an homage.
But the tone of it is extremely contemporary.
Well, but the music actually is there are more hummable tunes in this than there are in most recent music.
Absolutely. Well,
so,
Bobby
and
Lopez
that was a concern? Were they trying to write the kinds of songs that we remember from the past?
I mean, I think so. I think that Trey and Matt are big musical theater fans. Trey particularly.
Trey, I think he minored in musical composition, and Bobby Lopez, to a certain extent, obviously has, you know, that training. But I think that it exists in them. I think that their music for South Park and their music for Team America, we remember all of those songs. They naturally come up with these memorable, hummable tunes that people constantly leave the theater.
We're not trying to mock musicals, certainly. It's really more of an homage to the musical genre. We
Rodgers
just updated it a little bit.
My guests are two men who sing an awful lot in the Book of Mormon, Andrew Reynolds and also Josh Gad. The show is a huge hit. There are warnings on the tickets that some people might be offended. So once you have that, I guess if you're offended, you've been warned.
Yeah,
but Josh, is it true that you were called on the basis of a tape's of somebody else's singing?
Yes.
How did that work?
I was, well, not exactly.
It's like Otis Redding driving somebody to the audition and he winds up with the record contract.
Exactly. I was called by Bobby Lopez and I think he thought that I had the schlumpy right look for this character of Elder Cunningham, who's a bit of a mess. And he, you know, his one question was, can you sing? I know that you were in Spelling Bee, but can you sing? He got a demo from my musical director of something recorded for a benefit, and he put it in, and he goes, oh my God, this guy's got pipes, hired me. And I get there, and he's like, wow, your voice has changed significantly. I said, what do you mean? And it turns out that he was listening to my co-star, Barrett Foa, who has an incredible voice instead of...
But you sing quite well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Did you have to train?
Well, I certainly didn't not have to train. Let's put it that way. I've definitely been working on it, and it's you know, with my songs, it's a lot of craziness, a lot of rock sounds, a lot of operatic sounds. So it's just kind of running the gamut of insane kind of affectations. Andrew legitimately is a power singer, the likes of which
have
I've
you
never
done
heard.
A lot of musical comedy, Andrew?
That's sort of been my background. Did a little Hairspray for a bit on Broadway, and then was in Jersey Boys for a while after that. And I think most of what I've
you have done the most hummable shows of all time. I feel like of the past 10 years,
some tuneful.
But in Jersey Boys, of course, the audience knew the songs.
Yes, which was a whole other problem because they wanted to hear, you know. You have to sound like
you had to sound
guys.
Like Frankie Valli.
Luckily, I didn't have to, but somebody did. Yeah,
you play Mormon missionaries who are sent to Uganda as a team, and I guess it's fair to say that your characters are polar opposites.
yes,
but you seem to be getting along in real life.
We love each other. Andrew came in at the we had gone through four different elder prices through the process, and all of them were.
Well, he just seems perfect for the
part. And
so
I remember.
Did you know immediately?
Well, that's right. Yeah, I was. We were. He flew. They flew him to L.A. And there had been some well-known celebrities coming in to audition for the role, and I was like, "Wow!"
Sort of like the Love Boat.
Yeah, I was like, "This is not. This is not what I was imagining for this role." And I was like, "Oh man, we're missing the mark." And then this guy comes in. And literally, it was the first time I was ever intimidated by, you know, somebody that I played opposite of.
Oh,
and I was
gosh.
Like, this guy is the real deal. He's incredible. And he inhabited that role from the very first time he smiled, that big toothy grin. You're like, this is.
Smiling right now.
You look like
a Mormon missionary
right
now.
He is the perfect Mormon specimen. And that's why, you know, we love him so much. And we also.
Now, we should point out that this play is not in – well, it teases Mormons. It could really get a lot of people upset because of the picture of Uganda, the picture of Mormon missionaries. Mm.
Well,
but somehow it seems affectionate.
Well, I would say that we use the Mormon story as sort of a jumping off point, but it's not where we stay. It's not 2.5 hours of making fun of the Mormons, and the show quickly becomes about – more sort of religion in general and more specifically faith in general. So it becomes less about Mormons and more about just people's faith base and where does that come from and does it matter where it comes from. But it's a fun place to begin, I think, because even though it's the largest, it's the fastest growing religion in the world, it's still one of those religions that I feel like a lot of folks know a little bit about, don't know a lot about. We all know about the missionaries, and we've all had people come to our door, and so that's sort of where we begin, and it's a funny place to start.
And some people feel it hurts Mitt Romney's presidential campaign.
It's interesting that – no, it is. It's
well,
interesting.
Well, he doesn't come up in the
yeah,
play.
He's
the only person you don't make fun of, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe we can work on that.
It is interesting, though, when something can become a pop cultural touchstone that people are putting that in the conversation. You know, but what I will say is – Mormons deserve a lot of credit for the way that they have responded to the show because they are not attacking it. Even if they don't want to see it, they've been very, very giving and very open about what we're doing.
You haven't changed history. Anything that you say that's embarrassing.
No, it's all true. It's all based on
historic fact.
Yeah.
Your character, Elder Price, was – praying to be assigned to a very different place than this this impoverished village in Uganda.
He prays to go to Orlando. That is sort of his ideal location, is he wants to go to Orlando.
Well, to a New Yorker, Orlando doesn't seem all that incredibly different from Salt Lake City.
Yes. But I suppose if you're a teenage boy in Salt Lake, Orlando's, that's pretty cool.
But since Elder Price is regarded as the ideal Mormon, wouldn't he have welcomed more of a challenge than going to a city in Florida?
You would think, but I think that his motives are maybe not quite as pure as you would think they would be.
We found the great dramatic flaw in the Book of Mormon.
And there it is. I mean, yes, he's actually a little more human than he appears to be.
And with a huge, annoying ego.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying a little bit. So I can feel the audience sometimes pull away from me a little bit. They're like, don't be mean to that guy.
But then you win us back.
What about your character, Josh? Does he have a dream assignment?
Yes, he dreams of Lord of the Rings and going to Hazak's doom. I mean, I think that he is... you know, my character has a bit of ADHD and a bit of Tourette's, I think, and a bit of everything. And I don't think he's actually read the Book of Mormon. But what he does have is a really good heart. And, you know, his main objective is to just have a friendship. You know, I don't think he's had an actual friend who's ever really reciprocated.
So his dream is actually to be assigned...
Dream is to be with Elder Price, and if it means going to Uganda, he literally doesn't even know where it is.
Although Elder Price, I think that would be the last thing he'd want to do is to go with your character. A lot of the musical numbers are also kind of parodies, aren't they? For example, the first one is this hilarious song where the people of this Ugandan village tell the missionaries that they have an expression that helps them deal with the hardships of their lives. And it kind of reminds us of Hakuna Matata from The Lion King.
You could say that.
Yeah.
With a very different kind of message.
Sure.
Do you know if Hasadiga Ibowai is actually a curse in Uganda?
It is not.
It is not.
It is not.
We can safely say
yes.
It is.
So we're not. Yes. That's a
We can also
phrase.
Safely say that there used to be a curse, an accidental curse, but they got rid of it and put it in false words.
I wanted to know how it was spelled, and then I realized there's no song list in the playbill.
I think that's wise, because I think even to some of the titles of these songs, if you read them, I think would give away the joke. And already, you know, things are, you know, as people find out about the show, we sort of feel the audience, particularly with that number, I feel like when it starts, you kind of see people in the audience looking at each other.
I've read
like,
this in
this
the
is
Times
it.
Review.
This is it. This is the one that Ben Brantley wrote about.
It's...
So they all they know what's coming up. So it's better to kind of.
Has anybody walked out?
Yes. We've had two. We've had two or three walkouts, I think, yeah.
Oh, and they made a stink, didn't they?
But, you know, but that's...
Front of the theater to back of the theater.
But that's all. I mean, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Well, your character, Josh, hasn't read the Book of Mormon.
No,
even
he has
though
not.
He's out.
He is not.
He's supposed to use it as the basis of his missionary work.
My character's a bit of a mess. Yeah. He hasn't read the Book of Mormon, and I don't think he's interested in reading the Book of Mormon.
That's not the point.
Well, South Park has done a number of episodes about religions.
Sure.
Catholicism, Scientology, Islam. Mm-hmm. And weren't they even threatened after news about an episode about Muhammad appeared?
Yes, they were.
That was, I think, the only one that was censored on Comedy Central.
Yeah. I think so. I think maybe the Scientology. I mean, I think that they experience censorship a lot. I think sometimes they get around it and sometimes they don't. But I think that's something that they are prepared to
They're
deal
fearless
with.
And they don't compromise.
Yeah.
I mean, they truly don't. Early in the process for this, I remember a lot of us had questions about that Hakuna Matata song you referenced. They were unwilling to compromise, and they said, we're going to keep it the way it is, and we're going to test it with audiences because we believe that the message is very real, and what these villagers are saying is very real.
Have you heard from any parents who weren't familiar with South Park, except to know that it's a TV cartoon?
Because when
I was there, there were these parents with the kid.
Yeah.
And they were very concerned about the kid's reaction. The kid was much more prepared.
Yeah.
Because the kid is in South Park.
What I forget is when I think about, like, kids and parents and South Park has been on the air for 15 years. I think of myself as a child, and yet I'm actually 32. So as I get older, everyone else is getting older around me. So those parents that I feel like, oh, that's going to be a problem. No, actually, they were in high school the same time I was. They've been exposed to South Park this whole time. Their kids have been – I mean, you forget that, like, everybody is – there's a whole generation of people or, you know, a pocket of people that have sort of grown up with this brand of humor. So it's maybe not quite as – universally shocking.
It is interesting, though, to mention that when we first started Previews, it was a very different demographic than it is today. It was a lot of South Park fans, a lot of college-age kids. And now, you know,
it's Anna Wintour.
Yeah, you know, now it's the hot ticket in town, and it's a different demographic.
But you're still getting younger people, you know, at a time when people are talking about how Broadway – is aging out. It's important for shows like this and The Lion King.
Oh, absolutely. We have 400 people every day waiting outside the theater for lottery tickets. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
We do like a lot of the front row of the orchestra is you know, those tickets are raffled.
So they're certainly still there, but to a certain extent, it's also a lot older in the theater because people want.
But hopefully we're exposing some folks who weren't familiar with South Park, or at least with Train Matt, we're exposing them to that. Maybe
I think Comedy Central will see a spike in 95-year-olds this season. I really do.
There are a lot of show-stopping songs here. Do you go home humming any of them?
Occasionally,
you're not going to see them on Glee, are you?
Not a bad idea.
I wouldn't mind seeing some of these on Glee. I don't know. The Glee kids haven't come yet.
No, Telly did.
I don't know if we'll see it on Glee.
One of the things that confuses some members of the audience is that in Mormon Hell, not only are there people we might expect, like Jeffrey Dahmer, but also some coffee cups.
Yes. Yeah, I know that sort of throws people for a loop a little bit because there is the caffeine.
There's that knowing laugh from some members of the audience when they see what looks like a Starbucks.
It looks like a Starbucks cup.
Isn't that brilliant, though, that they don't hit it over the head? That if you know the joke, you know the joke. If you don't, so be it.
And that's because Mormons can't drink anything with caffeine in it?
At a time, there's a line that it's hot drinks are not for the body or belly that's in the Book of Mormon. And that was interpreted as, no coffee. You were not supposed to
cold
to
cocoa drink. Acceptable.
Yes. But and now I think there's been some flexibility with that. But at the time, there's no coffee.
And then there are so many references to other musicals. I was thinking about the way the Ugandans prepare a play for the visiting elders.
And
that reminds us of the Uncle Tom's Cabin sequence in The King and I. And then there's a song called Tomorrow is a Latter Day, which I'm assuming was inspired by Annie.
There's a little reprise of a song that's maybe a little Annie-ish. I sing a song that maybe has a little nod to Sound of Music, Die of Confidence.
There's a Music Man reference.
There's a Music Man. And they're all
the only thing we
they're
don't,
not parodies.
The only thing we don't parody is Lion King. That's the only thing that's
– What are you talking about?
Yeah. 30 times.
Josh, you star in a web comedy series as well.
Yes,
very
I do. It is called – thank you very much,
You're
Andrew.
Welcome.
It's called Gigi Almost American, and it's on My Damn Channel and YouTube. And it's an homage to kind of the old physical comedy form. I grew up watching Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and I kind of wanted to do a tribute to those guys and do a modern version of that.
And how long is each sequence?
They range from about 2.5 to 6 minutes, some of them, and it's about short and sweet. And
it's very funny.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again.
Check it out.
Well, we pointed out that it's hard to get tickets, but we do have ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to the show stars, although it's an ensemble
it
effort.
Very much yes, is.
It is.
And everybody is brilliant in it. But how can we not mention that Andrew Reynolds and Josh Gad are on stage more than everyone else?
Well, a little bit.
Get to sing a lot of songs together.
I do.
And separately. And thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having us.